in we're here in Steenbach Memorial Library, the conference room. My name is Troy Reeves with the Oral History Program here on campus, and I'm interviewing Bev Phillips. And Bev worked here for the Land Tenure Center and then for the General Library System.
That's right.
So Bev, to get a sound check, can I have you say your name and then spell your last name?
Beverly Phillips, P-H-I-L-L-I-P-S.
Okay. I'm going to turn it up just a little bit. I'm going to probably get it just a little closer to you. You can still speak, you know, basically normal voice, but it should pick you up a little better. All right, so our first question usually is this brief biography question. You know, we don't have the time we wish we did to do this full life history of you, so if you wouldn't mind summarizing your early years, take us actually up to and through at least your undergrad, if you don't mind.
Sure. I was born in 1949 in Mesa, Arizona. My father was in the Air Force at that time, and fairly shortly after that, he left the Air Force, I think. Anyway, we moved to Illinois. He was at Chanute Air Base, and I think he actually was still in the service at that time. Chanute is about 20 miles from Urbana, and we lived in Urbana. And at some point, he left the service, and we moved to California. I lived in the San Francisco area until about fourth grade, then moved back to Urbana, and he was employed as a civilian instructor for the Air Force. So I grew up primarily in Urbana, Illinois. I graduated high school there in 1967. And then I did an undergraduate degree in Spanish teaching with a minor in German. And then I did a master's degree in Spanish and Spanish American Literature and Linguistics, I think they called it. And so that was completed in, I believe, 72. In there someplace I got married, 1970. Then I had worked in libraries as an undergraduate, and I worked 1 year as basically an LSA, a paraprofessional, for a couple of years, and went back to library school and graduated from library school in 1976.
All right. I want to ask about growing up,
mm-hmm.
being a child of the late 60s, and then it looks like your undergraduate was late 60s to early 70s. And I'm wondering, and this could be more of a college question than a high school question,
mm-hmm.
but basically what you thought or did you think at the time as the Vietnam War was going on, what you felt about the war and U.S. involvement in it?
I thought it was a very bad idea. To be really honest, though, I grew up in a very conservative family, so I wasn't involved in a lot of protests or anything. Caused a lot of arguments around the dinner table, I would say, especially because I did live at home when I was an undergraduate. So. On the other hand, I was able to live at home. I was able to basically go to college by a combination of having a full scholarship from the state of Illinois and living at home, because we were not very well off.
So living at home allowed you not to have to get any loans or anything like that?
Right, right.
And so you mentioned a little bit about working at the libraries, and we're going to get to that fairly quickly,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't sound like it was your it didn't sound like that was your first choice in terms of profession.
I think in those years, you know, undergraduate school wasn't particularly about a profession. It was about following an interest. And so I did the Spanish and German and some political science and this and that, and just learned some things that I really enjoyed studying. Then I actually taught public school for 1 year, but I would say that was because I needed a job more than because I wanted to teach public school. When I went to the graduate program in Spanish, that took me 2 years to do that master's degree. And, you know, I was a graduate assistant during that time, and I really did enjoy that teaching. So that's the point at which I realized I like teaching. I'm just not sort of cut out for public school type environment. And then when I finished the Spanish degree, I started working in the university library there, 1 year in the geology library, and then in the acquisitions department. And I worked with Sarah de Mundo Law, who was the modern languages librarian. And I'd say she played the role of mentor, of helping me realize what the profession was about, and taking an interest in going to library school, which I then did.
And I didn't catch her name, I'm sorry.
That's okay. She was from Argentina, Sara de Mundo Law.
Okay.
Her husband's Chinese, so the last name is L-O.
Okay. Do you have sort of tangible examples in your mind, or maybe just sort of the general, your general impression or feeling as to why you call her a mentor?
She was... she was a person who just seemed to naturally expect you to do an excellent job. And I think more than anything, it would be that. I did discuss with her, you know, what I was going to do next and whether being a librarian would be something I would enjoy. And given where I was in my life at that time, we very much discussed it as, you know, something that had a lot of different routes you could take within it, that was, and that I seemed to have an aptitude for, so.
Was there any discussion either between you or yourself about going somewhere else to library school as opposed to?
As opposed to staying in Urbana?
Yeah.
No. There were times when I had this I'll never get out of this town feeling, that's I think very natural. It was an excellent school. It was the top ranked in the country at the time. It just seemed like very reasonable, and it took, you know, a little over a year. It was 1 year and 2 summers, so it seemed like it wouldn't hold me up that much. and I was already working in the acquisitions department, and they were able to keep me on half-time as a graduate assistant. And at that time, a graduate assistantship included a salary and full tuition there, so it was a good deal.
And do you recall, I know it was a while ago, but were there certain classes or professors in library school that stood out?
Yes. The two I enjoyed the most were my advisor, who is named Don something, I can't remember right now, who is a music and also history of printing. And then the cataloging teacher, who was named Catherine Henderson. When I took the cataloging course, people said, if you really want to learn this, she's the one to study with, but you'll do 20 hours a week homework. I thought that was impossible, but it was 20 hours a week homework each semester, 2 semesters, because I did advanced as well. But I think, and of course I was working half time and taking all the other classes, so it was a pretty intense year. But the reason her class stood out is not just because it was a lot of work, but she really emphasized learning both current practice and the reasons for it, and the basic, you know, why we're doing this in the first place, that things change. She very much emphasized, you know, cataloging rules change, practices change, but what we're trying to accomplish with organizing information and getting to those who need it stays the same. And so that was very important, I think, something I always took with me. And certainly things changed quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. And we might talk about some of those changes.
Maybe.
So after you graduated, it appears from your resume that you did get out of Urbana.
Yes, I did.
You got a job in the South, I believe it was.
Well, that was not so much having a job in the South as being married to someone who had a job in the South. My husband found, we had basically alternated graduate school and jobs for a few years in there, and he found a job at a small college in Jackson, Tennessee. And so I moved there too. We were there 2 years. For the first year, I didn't really have a job, and then the second year, I more or less organized one for myself. At a medical clinic, Jackson Clinic. And then at the end of that period, neither one of us really wanted to stay there, so then I did the sort of serious job hunt and actually went back to Urbana over the summer and worked for Sarah, and then got the position with the Land Tenure Center and moved to Madison in July of 1978.
So, were there other options for you in July of 1978, other job options?
I had a couple of other interviews scheduled. The one that was, looked the most promising was an interlibrary loan position. I think it was in Oklahoma, which I wasn't that eager to go to Oklahoma, but the job looked okay. This particular job, when I was in library school at that time, there was very much of an emphasis on choosing. Are you going to do public service or are you going to do technical services? And you have to, like, commit your life to one of these. And I always wanted to find something where I could do both. And ideally where my background in Spanish and, you know, kind of Latin American things would also come into the job. So this job, when I took it, seemed ideal. And in many ways, it was an excellent choice for me.
And so who knows who will listen to this in the future. But July 1978 or 1978 in terms of researching jobs is a bit different than researching jobs in 2011.
Absolutely.
So I'm wondering, what did you know or did you know much about the Land Tenure Center before you took the position?
Never heard of it until I saw the job announcement.
All right.
Heard of the University of Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think there's an occasional football game or basketball game played between the folks in Urbana and the folks in Madison.
Absolutely.
So, let's start with that then. And by that I mean, coming here, let's talk about the job first and the job at the LTC. What was your job? And if you want to sort of segue into some of the first things that you did, we can do that. If not, we'll just sort of do follow-ups. From there,
okay.
So.
Well, when I was hired, it was more of a kind of a national search process at the time, which might be surprising now. There was a round of telephone interviews first, and one thing I remember liking very much in that process, although it was a surprise, is because the Land Tenure Center and the library emphasized developing countries, at that point, one thing they were asking me about was, well, what did I know that was going on in different parts of the world? So I made it through that round, and I came here for an interview and stayed overnight, and maybe two nights even. So it was a pretty intense interview process. When I first worked for the Land Tenure Center, The library was in Steinbach Library, the fourth floor, near where we are right now. The library had been in this building from the time it was built. And the director of the Lantinier Center Library was Terry Anderson, Teresa Anderson. And there was an assistant librarian. That's the position I took. So I was the assistant librarian. There was also a full-time library services assistant who did ordering and serial check-in and office stuff. And at that time, they were editing a book, a printed bibliography based on the collection of UW-Madison and the Land Tenure Center on land tenure in Asia. It was third in a series. So there was one on Latin America, then Africa, and then Asia. So there was a fairly large staff and also student employees, student hourly employees. So that was the staff when I started. And my primary responsibilities early on were, I guess the main thing I did was cataloging at first, and learning about the subject matter.
Mm-hmm. So there was some, there was technical services in terms of cataloging, and then mm-hmm. Learning about the LTC. Did that involve just researching your own collection stuff?
Well, I certainly did that. There, I read some of the text written by people affiliated with the Land Tenure Center, primarily Pete Dorner. I remember especially reading his books explaining what land reform was all about, and agrarian reform and land tenure and all that stuff. And early on, we were well enough staffed that I was also able to audit some courses. So I audited, over those first few years, I audited Ag Econ courses with Latin America and institutional economics. So I sat in classes with Bill Thiesenhusen and Pete Dorner and Don Cannell. I also took just basic Ag Econ because I didn't have an economics background. And I, attended Brown Bags. And I also, at some point, also took the graduate reading course in French. So.
Now, is this something you were encouraged to do by the folks in the Land Tenure Center?
I think it was my idea, but they were happy to have me do it.
And did you have any involvement in, you mentioned that one of the things that we're doing when you first got here was creating the third book in the
mm-hmm.
series. Did you have involvement in that?
My only real involvement with that was in creating the index to it. It was pretty well done, and there was a full-time person, but I think I did the indexing to that. I also did some indexing of journal articles in the journals we received at LTC, and then the proofreading process, which was great fun.
Mm-hmm.
Proofreading and index, reading the numbers backwards out loud kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that.
Do you recall a moment after you got here that you sort of felt comfortable in what your job was and comfortable in doing it?
I remember at first when I was doing a lot of cataloging, it was very it was original cataloging because we were getting things that people didn't have anyplace else. So I learned a lot from Terry on in that, and and I also, cataloging rules changed, I took courses in that. But I remember the first time I was left alone. Terry went on vacation, and she had a son who was about 3 years old, and she was trying to explain being a librarian to him. So she told him, People come and want to know about farming in Afghanistan, and I don't know anything about farming in Afghanistan. So I help them find the books about farming in Afghanistan, and I leave them, and I still don't know anything about farming in Afghanistan. And so that was sort of where it stood. And then she left, and then the first question I got was someone called from USAID wanting to know about farming in Afghanistan. So it was pretty funny. And in those days, we had enough staff that I could actually, you know, do the preliminary research myself and find the texts and pass them on to the researchers. So that was the first time I sort of felt like, okay, I made it through through a kind of a difficult situation, because calls from the government folks always required a pretty rapid response.
Mm-hmm. Was that because they were helping to pay the bills?
They were paying the bills. They weren't helping to pay the bills. They were paying the bills. Yes.
You've mentioned Terry a couple of times. I wonder if you'd like to talk about how she was as a supervisor or as a director of Volunteer.
She, I think, really had the responsibility for making the collection what it was, because she was the first professional librarian that Land Tenure Center hired. And so she developed a classification scheme for these small pamphlety type things, which we used there are still things there for things that were sort of too small to be bound, and they were kept in filing folders and cabinets. And so she developed that. She was responsible for creating these print bibliographies in a time when that was the only way you could find out about rarer publications. And as a supervisor, she had a little button on her desk that said, save time, see it my way. But the thing was, she really meant it exactly what it said. If you didn't see it her way and wanted to discuss and had reason, she was very open to coming up with new ways to deal with things. So she was a really good person to work with. When she left LTC, she worked for Steenbach for a short while, including as their acting director for a year. And then she moved to the Eau Claire area, and I'm still in touch with her. She also worked as a librarian in a medical clinic and as a public children's school, public library children's librarian and adult reference. So she really showed that, you know, you can apply your knowledge lots of different ways.
Mm-hmm. What about the other staff and students at the LTC while you were initially there?
Mm-hmm.
Any of them stand out?
The person who was the LSA at the time, her name was Patricia Fry, F-R-Y-E. Her current name is Patricia Svensson. And she was an office person who could type faster than anybody ever knew, like 120 words a minute. She's now the personal assistant to the president of MATC. So she was very talented. And then we had lots of, you know, library school students and hourly student staff through the years, too.
And during your whole first stint here, and we should say you were here for LTC at least at the first iteration for I think 7 years or something like that till 85. So during that time, you were physically here that entire stretch. Okay.
Yes.
So I now want to go back. To 78 again and ask about your initial impressions of Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, before I even do that, I want to get your initial impressions of UW-Madison, because, you know, you came from and spent a significant chunk of time at Champaign-Urbana, so let's start with what impressions you may have had of campus.
You know, I had never been to Madison before, and I think at my impression was at University of Illinois, there was like Madison envy because, well, there had been a lot more political activity at Madison, and people always said, oh, they have beer on tap at the Union, and we didn't have beer in our Union. And also, they say, oh, and the campus is so beautiful. So actually, when I came, as far as the campus, I thought, this campus isn't that beautiful. I mean, I think it's because there are lakes. You know, it's pretty location. But the campus actually was not nearly as kind of unified in look. And after the political times, they built a lot of buildings with sort of fortress-like ground floors. So in that sense, I thought the campus was, you know, not exactly what I expected. But I like Madison a lot.
And then what about the town, your impressions of Madison as a place to live?
Well, I was, you know, young and didn't have much money, so it seemed to me that Madison was a nice place to live and not that Great Shakes as a place to visit. I mean, that was my personal impression, so if people came here, you know, it's like, okay. But, you know, downtown was pretty vital as far as businesses in those days. So there wasn't so much in the way of shopping centers and things. It was a lot of downtown businesses and neighborhood things. And, you know, I enjoyed Madison, and I've enjoyed Wisconsin in general, because even though I grew up in Illinois, it didn't seem like it had that much of an identity. And Wisconsin and Madison really seem to have a strong ethnic background and a strong feeling of place that I appreciated.
Where did you move to when you first came here?
When I first came here, I lived in a little apartment building near the Coliseum. Kind of not that great of a neighborhood, but it was fine.
And did you stay there? How long did you stay there?
I stayed there until I got divorced, which was maybe 3 years later after that. And then I lived for a short while in on Jefferson Street near the stadium, which was very nice. I could walk to work. And then I was out of the country for a couple years, so.
Okay, so your first stretch again was from 78 to 85.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about that a little bit, but I'm wondering now that we've talked about it you've been thinking about it for a bit, were there major projects or other things that during that 7 year period
mm-hmm.
that really stand out?
Yes. As I said, the first few years I was more becoming familiar with the subject matter and learning how things worked. And then the first major project I was involved in would have been the work with the Nicaraguans, the people from Sierra. And this was at the time of the Sandinista Revolution. So when the rebels won, one of the very first things they did was they wanted to create a library within the Agrarian Reform Institute in the government. And they sent a librarian and her assistant up to work with us for probably about 3 months, 2 or 3 months they were here. And so at that point, they were starting a library from scratch on the subject of land tenure, which is what we did. So we worked closely together at kind of identifying materials that would be useful to them, them seeing how we organize this kind of fugitive literature and developing a version of that that would work in Spanish. So that was a major project, and it was very satisfying because there was all the enthusiasm from the young people involved in the government at that time. They were mostly in their 30s. Then they were the first people who came. Then about 6 to 9 months later, maybe a year, a group of people that worked for Sierra, which get back to what the acronym is in a minute, but they were going to be the researchers, the economists and sociologists, and they came up for kind of training with the Land Tenure Center folks, and we did some also follow-up with the library. So that was exciting, and at that time LTC wasn't doing very much in other parts of the world, and certainly the knowing the Spanish part came in very handy because these people, none of them spoke English or very little English.
Mm-hmm. So you've said it a couple times, Sierra?
Sierra. It was Centro something Reforma Agraria. C-I-E-R-A. Was the name of the...
E-R-A.
Yeah, was the name of the center within the Nicaraguan government where they created this little library. Centro Investigación. The IWAS Investigación. It was a research center within their Green Reform Division.
Okay. You mentioned something, and it came through so quickly I didn't get a chance to write it down. No, but when they came, you said you were talking about a certain kind of literature?
I was saying just fugitive literature.
Okay.
The Land Tenure Center always, library, always emphasized collecting those fugitive materials that were not in other libraries.
And so that's what it means by fugitive.
Right. Gray literature, some people say, same thing. So we were collecting working papers, government documents, unpublished studies, things like that, as well as, you know, published books and journals.
And was that something that the Land Tenure Center in general had made a priority? Is that something that Terry had made a priority as she became director?
No, it's something the Land Tenure Center had as a priority. The Land Tenure Center, from even before it was established, there was a conference where they got together and said they should be a Land Tenure Center. And even from, there was a World Land Reform Conference in, I believe, the late 50s. That conference included a recommendation that the Land Tenure Center should include a library that would gather these harder to find materials. So that was always envisioned as part of the center. And the library was always envisioned as being open to everyone. You know, a lot of departments on campus at that time had their libraries that they didn't let anyone else into. And Land Tenure Center Library always really wanted to be open to as many people as would find the information valuable, whether on campus or not.
You mentioned folks from Nicaragua coming here,
mm-hmm.
and I know from your resume what I have looked at it that you traveled.
Yeah.
Did you do any traveling in this initial stretch, this 1978 to 85 stretch?
Yeah, I did two or three. They were all Latin America. I did a follow-up visit to Sierra. It was pretty short. That was probably about the time that the U.S. government did not want to fund research work with the Nicaraguan Sandinistas too much. It was very brief. It was 3 or 4 days, you know, something like that. A similarly brief visit to some kind of... I don't even remember what the somebody in the Dominican Republic just more of an evaluation of what they had as far as library resources. And then there was a more major project in Ecuador, which I also included a I had a couple of visits to Quito. Again, 1 year and then another one a year later. So all of those were during this time period.
Okay. Did you know that that could be part of the job when you were hired, that you were going to be able to?
When I was hired, I think one of my major selling points was they said, well, what if this job only lasts a year? And I said, I don't care. So, I didn't really come in with that in mind. I certainly knew that's where they worked. And when I had been here not very long, it became clear that as they tried to patch funding together from various projects, that if a project included a kind of library or information piece, I might be involved.
And was that because of your language background?
When Terry and I were both here, I would say yes. Yeah. Okay. And the work was really only in Latin America. I mean, the work I was involved in. And mostly that was what LTC was doing at that time as well.
In either of the other projects, the Dominican Republic and Ecuador, did folks from either of those places come here first or come here as part of the...
In both of them, people from there came here. The Dominican Republic one was not really a library project, so the people who came here were government, you know. I would say LTC did a sort of training of mid-level, you know, folks in the government. So they did come here, but they weren't involved in any library thing here. The one in Ecuador, though, the librarian from there also came here for a while. In that one, I believe I went there, then she came here, then I went there. That's kind of the way it went.
Did you have any reservations or hesitations traveling to any of these three places?
No. I really trusted the LTC people. They were very concerned about safety. And I think that was, if anything, reinforced when a time came when, I think it was El Salvador, that the AID people, and USAID was the primary funding agency for LTC, they really wanted some folks to go to El Salvador. And the LTC people said it's not safe, and they didn't go. And the people who went instead, one of them got shot. So I thought they were, you know, they were looking out for us. And I mean, they went later when it was safe to El Salvador. But so I hadn't had any reservations, and that just made me, you know, trust their judgment even more, that they would say no if they thought it was unsafe.
Anything else that comes to mind in that first chunk of time, 78 to 85, either staff or issues or projects?
Well, during that time, I don't think it's on my resume because it's not that relevant, but there was a time, 1 year there, when I was, I guess you would say, acting director, because Terry had planned to leave. She was going to quit and move away. Her husband had a job offer somewhere else, or I don't remember the details exactly. So she had actually turned in a resignation. And then she was offered to be the acting director of Steenbach, so she, the paperwork hadn't made it that far through, so she didn't exactly quit after all, but she went on a leave of absence. So there was a year there where she was the acting director of Steenbach, and I was the acting director of Lantanier Center Library. And that would have been right before period when I went to the Virgin Islands. So 83, 84 in there somewhere.
Okay. So she was acting at Steenbach.
She was acting, exactly. Exactly. And I was acting, and we didn't hire somebody to replace me. You know, basically, the funding situation was such that the way we were able to keep two librarians on staff was by having one heavily involved in these international projects. So during the year that she, you know, when she was at Steenbach, I just didn't do the international stuff. I just stuck with the library that year.
Okay. And we talked about this when we first met for the pre-interview. But since obviously we're doing this for the record, if we've been talking about this sort of finite period, 78 to 85, I think we're at a point now where I will ask why it is a finite period from 78 to 85.
It's a finite period because, again, the impetus for it was really the funding situation at LTC and not being able to support two librarians, but on the other hand, they didn't really want to get rid of us either. So I took a job that was for 6 months in, I have to check it myself, I don't remember. Yeah, 1984, as acting director of the library of St. Croix campus of the College of the Virgin Islands. This was, the librarian was on sabbatical, and so I went down there for that period. And then I came back only for the summer, and then I, again, the funding was still up in the air, so I had an opportunity to go to Mexico on a teaching Fulbright, so I went to Mexico. So I was gone like basically a year and a half in there on those two jaunts.
Is there anything in those two jaunts that... since we're asking you about your history as a librarian that you feel is important to get on the record?
Not too much. When I was in the Virgin Islands, it was a very interesting, nice experience. And it gave me sort of a more management experience because I was stepping into a, you know, a directorship where there was already staff there. So it wasn't like, oh, you're the director of yourself, you know. So that was good. The Mexico part, I spent part of it in Oaxaca and part of it Cuernavaca and Mexico City. And the Mexico City part included some work on, I did this sort of short course on English for librarians, for Spanish-speaking librarians. So that kind of fit together nicely with both what I'd done with the librarians from Nicaragua and Ecuador, and also I had taken a few English as a second language courses before and taught Spanish, so that kind of all fit together nicely.
And so again, we've been talking about this as a finite period, but it sounds like you were anticipating coming back after this.
I was anticipating coming back if possible. I like the job.
So how did that all then play out?
How did that play out? Well, let's see. It played out that while I was in Mexico, Terry left. And in between there, she actually worked in circulation for Steenbach for a while, but she left Land Tenure Center and she was working for Steenbach. And whereas it initially appeared that they could go from having two librarians to only one and it would be me, then that turned out not to be quite on the up and up after all. I'm not quite sure why, so I got word from the director of Land Tenure Center, who I think it was Marion Brown at the time, that I needed to apply for the job long distance. And the reason I laughed at this was, you know, this was mid-80s, but communication was still so different at the time that I remember what I had to do was I wrote up a letter of application or whatever, everything, whatever I had to do. And it was not sure at all that I would get the job. I mean, at that point, I did not know. You know, it was not a done deal. And I found a telex office in Mexico City and convinced someone to let me type my information into the telex machine, which came out in some kind of paper strip on this end. And that's the way I applied for the job. And I got it. Yeah, it was very odd because I'd never even, you know, touched that kind of machine before, and it was punching holes in paper and stuff. It was pretty weird.
Mm-hmm. And was the job, did you get to finish your Fulbright in Mexico? I mean, did you get?
Yes, I did. Yeah, there was someone who was sort of acting director of the LTC library for maybe 6 months in there before I came back. Her name was Margaret something, and she subsequently worked at the engineering library for a while in patents.
So was there we'll start it this way. Was there a change, at least in your mind, was there a change when you came back and you were now the director of, not the interim director,
right,
not the acting director, but you were the actual director of the land?
You know, the biggest thing that happened, okay, so it's pretty clear that there were, you know, a lot of technological changes going on at this time. And Terry had made an arrangement, and we were very interested in getting the information about our collection out to the world because we had a lot of unique materials. So Terry had reached some kind of agreement with the National Ag Library that I wasn't in on all that much, where we were going to index the things in our collection to be included in Agricola, and in return we would get some kind of computer tapes which we would be able to use to create an online catalog or something, you know. That was the idea. But in the interim, the person at the National Ag Library with whom she had made this arrangement, it wasn't just us, there were other places that were going to index for Agricola as well, that person got fired, and the new person kind of abrogated the agreement. So when I came back, what we had for like about a year and a half's worth of acquisitions was a god-awful book catalog on printouts in some kind of system with fields that they weren't the standard fields for author and title like you use for cataloging. It was something that was from Agricola for indexing. It was supposed to be Agricola's new stripped down, easier indexing method. So when I came back, it was certainly clear that there was a change, because the first thing I did was say, okay, forget this Agricola business. It wasn't completely canceled, but it obviously wasn't working out. So I started cataloging everything in OCLC, organizing. Actually, we didn't even quite have we had all those printouts. So I came up with a way to change those printouts into something that could be a print index that was slightly more usable. And then I did a lot of coding things and working with people at the computing center, which at the time was MAC, Academic Madison Academic Computing Center, the forerunner of DO-IT, and creating a catalog that we could use. And then we, about the same time, luckily, the first online catalog for the libraries here came online, and so we participated in that, and we weren't really able to take the things from that book catalog and get them into OCLC right away, but we used OCLC and the OPAC going forward. So that was a big project, you know, how am I going to change all of these weird things into something that people can use to at least find what's in the library. It was a challenge.
And when we're talking about you doing this, was it you overseeing some staff to do this? Was this a hybrid of you doing it and other people helping? Was it just you doing it?
Well, we had students working on the input and all that. We had this system that, you know, and we had library school students who did the one thing that the Land Tenure Center did at that library did at that time was index the journals we got selectively. So other people did a lot of the cataloging and indexing, and I was just supervising and training and proofreading and all that stuff. But making this book catalog thing work, that was me and somebody from Do It, because I distinctly remember sitting in the basement over at in Mac, you know, punching stuff into the cards so that, and seeing if the program that this guy and I had worked out would actually create a book catalog that would be useful. And then I did some proofwriting and sort of word processing, I get to move a few things around that couldn't be handled by the computer system. So I did it.
And how did you feel about doing that type of work? Did you see
I liked
as,
it. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I enjoyed the challenge of taking, I mean, it was kind of going back to what I said about the whole purpose of the library, you know, was that there was this information that nobody else had and it was not accessible, and I was coming up with sort of an interim way to make it accessible so that the library would work for people. And then long-term, something else that would be, you know, more sustainable for the future. So at the same time I was punching that telex thing, and I was also remembering, you know, how that cataloging system worked and trying to figure out how I could rearrange that information to create something that would the public could use until we got things back on track. Because it was a clear problem, you know. People couldn't find anything in the library. We quit putting cards in the catalog and didn't do anything else. So it was frustrating for everyone.
A couple more things
sure.
Before we go this time. So physically, when you moved back,
mm-hmm.
are you still physically in this location?
Yes.
By this location, I mean fourth floor, Steenbach
right,
Library.
Right, right.
Almost exactly where we are right now.
Absolutely,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
By that time, we had made arrangements with Steenbach that they handled our circulation and they handled course reserves because they had longer hours. So course reserves from our collection. And we did everything else in our offices.
And then you personally, you said that you were living somewhere and then you moved.
Mm-hmm.
When you came back, did you come back and look for a house somewhere?
I live in an apartment near Hilldale for a few years when I came back. So I lived there until I bought a house in 1990. So maybe 4 years I was in that apartment.
Okay. So near Hilldale. Okay.
Yeah. Sheboygan Avenue, one of those.
Yep. Bus drives past those
yeah.
every day. And I think this takes us to a decent stopping point.
Okay.
I do like to leave our narrators with the last word. So is there anything that's on your mind? It doesn't have to be within the time frame.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there anything that's on your mind that the fear is that if we don't talk about it, that it may not be on your mind the next time we meet?
Okay. Well, there's always that fear, but the one thing that may not be clear from that I think is interesting from this time period is that, you know, the Land Tenure Center people were in another building. They always were from the beginning of having the library. They, even before this Steenbach building was here, the library was in Hiram Smith and they were in King Hall. So the library operated fairly independently. And obviously they didn't have other people on staff who knew about libraries. But there was a really nice working relationship, not only with the Land Tenure Center folks, which at that time included a lot of faculty members, who had kind of a part-time appointment to Land Tenure Center. But also with the graduate students in the development studies program. So whereas the library was used by everyone, and we did do studies, and they came from all over campus, and that was great, the primary local clientele that I got to know very well would have been the graduate students in the development studies PhD program, which was also at that time managed through the Land Tenure Center, but it was a separate program, and now they both still exist, but they're separate.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank you for your time today, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay.